This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we're focusing on wildfire season. We'll hear from the director of CAL FIRE about predictions for the upcoming season and the interface between firefighting and coronavirus. We'll also head to the CAL FIRE attack base in Redding to hear more about how firefighters are trained to contain fires with aerial attack. If you have questions or comments for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, June 12th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. Whether we're ready or not, fire season is coming, and experts are predicting another bad fire year in 2020. And what is that going to look like during an ongoing pandemic? It's going to be a challenge. For example, how do you socially distance during a natural disaster? That's the focus of today's show. We'll now turn to Beth Rujak, host of Insight for CAP Radio. She recently spoke with CAL FIRE Director Chief Tom Porter. The first thing Beth asked was how CAL FIRE is looking at COVID-19 right now and all of the changes they will have to make.
This is a question we've been working through for the last several months. Really, since February, we knew that we were going to have some challenges, and March, in earnest, we moved into a planning cycle that has been a nationwide effort with the activation of three area command teams across the nation to look at how wildland fire and particularly fire camps, but also mobilization to fires is going to look in this this COVID environment. California is lucky to be the only state with a state fire chief, and he's a CAL FIRE fire chief, Scott Jalbert from San Luis Obispo, who is an area commander and one of those team leads. And so we have a very California perspective in the wildfire response plan that is for our area. And it really covers a lot of the nuts and bolts that we need to be looking at, which you've identified, and I hope to cover a little bit more through your questions.
Yeah, I do want to know about those nuts and bolts. For example, firefighters stay at base camps. They have to be fed all together. They are transported in vehicles of all types all together. So I am interested in those specifics.
We, as fire agencies, all need to look out for the health and safety of our firefighters. But we need to do that with a perspective that wildfires in particular, but all disasters are still going to happen. And the public is who we serve and who we need to protect from those very acute incidents that are happening while there's more of a long-term COVID kind of incident that's unfolding across the nation. And so we are looking at fire crews and engine companies, and those kind of modular pieces of what we use to fight fire as kind of a home unit. They really are all ready together. They are, by and large, monitoring each other's and their own health. And so traveling to and from fires from the CAL FIRE perspective is pretty much unchanged in this COVID landscape. We will have engines and bulldozers and aircraft all responding without hesitation, post haste, to every incident. So that's that piece. And with that, my direction has been to double down on the initial attack success rate. Really looking at hitting every single fire we get as quickly as possible to keep it as small as possible, so we don't have then that next piece of developing fires that require a large base camp or thousands of firefighters to congregate in order to put the fires out or the larger fire out.
Well, let's talk about California's wildfire season then overall so far. Your website lists 2,338 incidents. At this time last year, I believe the number was 1,340. So the number of incidents is significantly ahead, though I don't see any incidents so far that's been over 5,000 acres.
That is true. And so we have more fires happening this year, and thus far we've been able to keep them smaller. It will be a challenge as the rest of the season wears on. But for now, that's a good indicator that our initial attack success is going quite well. And I think, another part of this is last year was a very wet year. And this year we kind of had enough rain to get the grass crop up, but particularly in the north part of the state, it's been a dry year. And so we are turning the corner. Fires are starting to get bigger. And while initial attack success is our number one priority when it comes to responding to fires, we know that 5% or less of the time, there are going to be fires that grow bigger than 10 acres. 95% of the time, we put fires out before they get to 10 acres. So those 5%, some of them we're seeing. In about 2 weeks to a month, we're going to start to see the chaparral species really dry out statewide. That will put the next component of the fuel models into play, and we'll start having what traditionally we've called brush fires, but chaparral fires, and then that will move into the timber as well, potentially.
Let me talk about safety with regard to residents, people who have to be evacuated somewhere. And I know at the Quail Fire recently, there was a COVID-19 testing site set up. I believe that was done by the county. But tell me about that interface between Cal Fire and the county with respect to moving people and perhaps having to gather them at evacuation sites.
Great question. And again, that comes back to the public safety being paramount. And when we have to pull evacuation orders in conjunction with local law enforcement or the sheriff, we do that very quickly in order to get people out of harm's way. And I think, the Quail Fire did give us a starting point for how this is going to look. We have been planning with Cal OES and our local government and law enforcement partners to figure out, including Red Cross, to figure out how best to protect those people that have that acute need to leave an area from being exposed to COVID-19 in a sheltering environment or a evacuation center. And so we do have plans that we're working through. We are identifying areas throughout the state that we can, at the same time that we will have to set up large fire camps, which we know we will. I'm trying to minimize that, but I know we're going to be in large fire camps at some point. A lot of times those are either co-located on fairgrounds with evacuation centers, or they take up space that will be needed for evacuation centers in order to provide for physical distancing and proper health monitoring. And so these are all things that we got a tiny taste of from the Quail Fire, but we are planning on a larger scale for when we have the bigger incidents.
So when you look at how best to protect people in an evacuation situation, will it always include, does the protocol call for COVID-19 testing?
I would come back to the Quail Fire. What happened was not testing as much as screening. What we're anticipating is for no-touch temperature monitoring, asking the questions of whether an individual has any symptoms or has been in contact with people with symptoms. that's about the extent of what an assessment will look like. I don't see us moving to a mandatory testing of those in evacuation centers. That is not the intent.
I do want to know whether there have been or are active cases of COVID-19 right now among the CAL FIRE staff and employees and the firefighters. Are you dealing with those cases yet?
Interestingly, and this is different from department to department. So there are some local departments that have had pretty large numbers for their size. And even including the federal government has seen some cases. Most of those are coming from the outside. They're hiring their seasonal employees, and they're starting to do training. And they've identified several, I think nine in the Forest Service. And then for us, a department of approximately 7,000 employees, we have three confirmed known cases. And of those three confirmed cases, none of them were contracted at work. It's also interesting, CAL FIRE responds to somewhere between 700 and 1,000 calls every day throughout the state. And the bulk of those are in our local government contracts, including COVID type responses or flu-like symptoms, but EMS calls. And of the thousands of calls we've been making since February and March, we still only have those three cases, and only one of them is from the areas where we have most of those types of calls: Riverside County, San Diego, Lake Napa, and Butte are some of our bigger Schedule A contracts, or those municipal type contracts where we do that service. And so PPE works, masks work, gloves, eye shields, they work. So our responders that are going out and working with people that are ill with COVID or other illnesses really limit their exposure by wearing that PPE. And I can't impress upon the public and my employees enough, which I've been doing very regularly, how important that mask is to really protect not only yourself but others from your inadvertently shedding and spreading.
You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. More about the upcoming wildfire season when we return.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the George Gund Foundation, working to make Cleveland and Northeast Ohio more globally competitive, livable, sustainable, and just. More information available at gundfoundation.org. From the Annie E. Casey Foundation, using research and evidence to develop solutions that help families and communities create a brighter future for young people. More information is available at aecf.org. And from Americans for the Arts. Support for NPR comes from this station and from EBSCO, partnering with libraries to transform lives through a commitment to provide relevant, reliable information when, where, and how people need it. Learn more at EBSCO.com. From Progressive Insurance, offering a way to buy home insurance with their Home Quote Explorer tool. Custom quotes and rates are available online. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive. From Procter & Gamble, maker of Align Probiotic, a daily supplement to support digestive health, containing a probiotic strain developed by gastroenterologists with 20 years of research. More at AlignProbiotics.com. And from Americans for the Arts.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Before the break, we were hearing from CAL FIRE Director Chief Tom Porter, who recently spoke with CAP Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak, about the interface between fighting wildfires and COVID-19. Let's get back to their conversation.
As part of all of this, Chief Porter, Governor Newsom has called for the deferring or the giving up of a negotiated raise for CAL FIRE firefighters and asked them also to take an additional 10% pay cut. There is some opposition to this. Can you confirm where those discussions are and where you are on this ask by the governor?
Those discussions are going on between CalHR and each of the unions of the state, including Local 2881, CAL FIRE firefighters. And I have not been a part of those conversations. I support the governor's proposal and budget without saying. And I know that we're going to be in very difficult financial times. And preserving jobs in order with pay cuts is an important thing to do if that's what needs to be done.
The budget, though, does include new equipment that had already been ordered and was already arriving. This includes the dozen or so Black Hawk helicopters. So is that equipment still arriving so that it can be used for this firefight season? And to what degree is it going to change the game?
Yeah, through various things that have happened in that helicopter supply chain, we actually have increased or shortened the schedule for getting those helicopters into California. But it also needs to be clear that we're only going to have at most two of them available for firefighting during this peak season. As we get into the fall, we have two. One is currently in Colorado getting some repairs done. The other one is here finishing up its training cycle and acceptance cycle. And we'll be here in the north part of the state. Those two will be probably the only ones we see fighting fire this summer. The rest will start being delivered through late summer into fall and then into next spring. And we'll continue later into next year. And that actually is a little bit ahead of the schedule, the delivery schedule that we expected for the 12 helicopters that we will ultimately receive.
One more point I want to make. We heard from the Amador El Dorado unit of CAL FIRE, which is suspending burn permits in Alpine County, also Amador, El Dorado, and Sacramento counties. And in this announcement from Camino was the sentence, 2020 started out with the driest February since the 1950s in California. If that's true, what's your expectation of this wildfire time ahead of us?
Yeah, that February was scary for us. Really, we were seeing more fires in February than we have seen in a very long time. And it was partly because of early rains and some of those grasses started to cure. What we see now is, while we did get some mid-spring rains, that helped for a little while, but it didn't do anything really for the snowpack in any great way. And we are expecting moderate drought conditions to persist throughout the northern part of the state in particular, which actually makes it difficult to fight fire in the timber areas because there's so much of that large woody material is available for burning really early in a fire. Often it takes some time and some heat to be able to get that kind of material going. During drought conditions, that happens very quickly. And that is a big concern for us. And a lot of the areas that are going to be more active this year than they were last year are in the higher elevations, including the national forests, that really didn't have a lot of big fires last year. This year, that's going to change, and that's why an aggressive initial attack is so important.
That was CAL FIRE Director Chief Tom Porter speaking with CAP Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak. One of the things you heard Beth and Chief Porter talk about in that interview was some of the new helicopter equipment that CAL FIRE will have this season. Well, recently, the CAL FIRE Air Attack Base in Redding invited the press to see how they train their teams to contain fires with aerial equipment. NSPR's Matt Fidler was there and has the story.
Aerial firefighting can be a very effective tool in fighting a wildfire, but it's dangerous and certainly not easy. So when I got word that I could visit a tactical training session of aerial firefighters, I jumped on it, wanting to know more about this firefighting technique and how it's used here in Northern California.
So we're going to show you what goes on around here at the base, and then we'll go out to the exercise itself and see them doing their job in action.
This is Captain Bo Tipton. He's an aerial firefighter and works with trainees. He's going to be explaining what we see throughout the day, but before we go to see planes swooping down on simulated fires, I asked him why there were no aerial firefighters dousing the campfire when it first started.
So when it's really, really, really windy out there, like it was on the campfire, turbulence is really, really bad. I mean, it's extreme. These guys really can't fly in that stuff. Plus, it comes to the point where it's almost ineffective for us to even do it, because once they drop the retardant out of the plane, it just blows away in the wind. It doesn't even get on the fire.
You know, sometimes we have these fire warnings and, you know, some of the PG&E
like
shutoffs.
Red flag.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the red flag warnings. Does that usually mean that if a fire happened, you probably wouldn't be able to, you know, bring the aerial firefighters up in the air?
We fly all the time in red flag conditions. We do.
Okay.
There's certain conditions which are just, we'll get up there. We're going to go try. Don't get me wrong. But we're going to get up there and just go, this isn't working. You know, and it's dangerous. It's not working. You know, it's not worth anybody's life.
And that's what this tactical training is all about. Assessing the situation as it unfolds, and using that information to keep people as safe as possible. Maybe you've seen this on TV. A runaway fire. Maybe it's heading towards a town, and these huge planes, sometimes 747s, drop thousands of gallons of this red fire retardant on a blazing wildfire. It's impressive. Well, apparently it's a complicated feat that takes a team of people, both on the ground and in the air in various kinds of aircraft, to make it all happen. And this is where they train the teams in these specialized tactics. At the tarmac, I get a good look at the variety of aircraft, from small planes with large windows used for taking pictures and assessing the big picture, to helicopters and large-bellied tanker planes outfitted with special equipment to carry the fire retardant.
For the exercises, we're just running water instead of the actual red retardant that we drop out of the planes and over fires. For a training exercise, water obviously is a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So they're filling it with water right now.
We caravan into the foothills east of Redding on the north side of Concow Creek. There are red tarps with smoke bombs scattered about the area that will be the various simulated fires.
So this is the beginning of the exercise.
You didn't leave us.
I didn't.
A small crowd of 24 instructors and what looks like a group of CAL firefighters are sitting around their radios, listening and waiting for the next exercise to start.
So these are just the firefighters that are on the helicopter. They're out here too today, so they're just kind of playing role players, just acting as firefighters on the ground.
Okay, so they're kind of simulating the on-the-ground guys.
Yep, exactly.
Yep, I see smoke. Smoke over the ridge, so that must be something starting here.
That smoke down there is coming out of a smoke machine, so it's a total simulation. That's a simulated fire.
Although he's on the ground explaining things to us now, he'd be up in the air during an actual fire.
And I fly in the back seat of that airplane out there. So that's what we call our air tactical platform. So all the airplanes and helicopters you see dropping on these fires, we're up above giving them direction.
This position is known as the Air Tactical Group Supervisor. He has the big picture of the fire and is communicating with everyone else.
The Air Tactical Group Supervisor flies 2,500 feet above the ground. So he's going to be up there quite a ways. And that's that airplane right there. That's him.
I watched this plane fly high overhead, way above the plume of smoke coming from the ground. Then suddenly, a helicopter with a large bucket below it swoops in and drops the water from the 500-gallon bucket directly over the smoke and flies away. After the helicopter is gone, a small tanker flies over the same spot as the helicopter and drops a portion of its 1,000-gallon capacity tank.
So for the exercise, they got 1,000 gallons of water in there, but they can control how much they drop.
The plane is flying only a little higher than the helicopter we just saw, but for the larger capacity tankers, like the C-130, carrying 3,000 gallons, they are not nearly as maneuverable, so it gets more complicated. If there is a need for a larger drop from a plane like the C-130, the Air Tactical Group Supervisor will radio for the lead plane to come in first.
He has to come down and do a show-me run, so he has to come down and show the C-130 the run.
Just let out a little tiny bit of water there.
That's smoke out of the engine.
Oh, smoke.
He has a button in there.
Ah.
When the tanker's behind him, that smoke tells the tanker where to drop.
The lead plane first tests the air conditions to see if it's safe for this big tanker to fly here in the first place. Then if it's safe, he does the show-me run.
The lead plane, woo, right above us. Oh my God, that thing is huge. Whoa!
Ha! The enormous C-130 drops thousands of gallons on the smoke bomb just 100 feet in front of us. It looks like a concentrated but very intense rainstorm, falling for 15 to 20 seconds.
Just a fine mist.
Ah. Looked really accurate. Like, yeah, they got, like, so a really big part of this training, it seems, is coordinating.
That's all it is, 100%.
Which means that when Captain Tipton or anyone else in his position is up in the tactical aircraft at 2,500 feet, it requires intense concentration.
We have 6 radios in the airplane and 9 frequencies. So it would be just like 9 people standing around me, talking to me. And I have to listen to what they're saying, prioritize it, and get back to them about what they wanted in that order.
I watched several passes and water dumps from the various planes and helicopters throughout the day. And I was impressed at how precise it was and how much coordination an operation like this takes.
Very coordinated, because you don't want to bend aluminum. That's very important.
It's an interesting way to put it.
Reporting for North State Public Radio at the CAL FIRE Redding Air Attack Base, I'm Matt Fidler.
And that is your program. As always, if you have thoughts for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. While you're there, make sure to sign up for your county's emergency alert system. So if there is a wildfire in your area this season, you'll be on the list to be notified about it. We have links to sign up for emergency alerts for every county in our region. So again, visit our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Haracha, Eric Radavil, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. A special thanks to Cap Radio. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.